America and to all of our listeners all over the world. You are now listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and most Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is a full house this week with Chris Logi, Patrick Mifflin, and Teresa Sammons all here. Say hi, guys.
Hey.
Yeah. Hello.
Yeah. So this episode is going to be for October 22nd, 2022. We are now a little over a week before Halloween. And then you know what happens after that.
We all go on diets because we ate too much candy?
No, you go out onto your car, you suddenly turn in your local news station, and they start playing Christmas music for 24 hours.
Aye.
In fact, I would not be surprised if this is the year they all collectively decided to start doing it the day before Halloween.
Ugh.
Because let's face it, that's eventually what it's going to get to. They're going to, you know, Christmas slowly starts nudging past all of the other holidays until eventually it will be the one holiday to rule them all. But, yeah, so, stuff that happened this week that we will be talking about. Well, they might as well decide and put like a, I don't know, a revolving door at UK's parliament because guess what just happened to their prime minister?
Washed out.
Yep. And in under 6 weeks, too.
That job must suck.
Well, it's more like it's the Tories that suck.
Yeah.
Like they suck. I'm sorry. They just.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. We got more news on the Elon Musk Twitter saga. It's not good. The student loan relief plan is live, kind of. It's complicated. Some other stuff, like, for example, the EPA is now starting a civil rights probe into Mississippi's water issues. We'll be talking about that. Trump was officially subpoenaed by the January 6th committee, and we've got a trailer for the remake or redoing of one of the classic old, well, for a lot of younger people, old school, but for us, it was contemporary anime franchises. All that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, before we get to all of that, just real quick, has it started cooling off in parts that you guys were living in?
I had to turn the furnace on for the first time 2 days ago.
Yeah, same here. We had the heat actually came on, and I don't know what it's like about if you guys who have like a centralized heating system. When it hasn't been on for a while, and then it kicks on for the first time in several months. Is it me, or does it smell like the house is burning?
Yeah.
Well, having never... Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I've had both. I've had central heat and air, and mm-hmm. then just electric resistance heat in the form of a floor heater.
Yeah.
And those of you who live in the South will know exactly what I'm talking about. You probably have a scar on your feet to prove it.
Yep.
Or just like baseboard heat.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, Utah really is a southern enclave.
Yeah. But yeah, because, you know, it hasn't been on for a long time. It's collected dust. And then all of a sudden it starts
blowing
up.
That dust.
Yeah. Blowing that dust, burning that dust, one of those things. But
yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah. but yeah, so it's actually gotten really cold during the evenings for the last few days, like getting down to like the 30s and 40s, which, you know, I know, like, say up north, that's not terribly cold, but down here, that's basically subarctic temperatures. So, but yeah.
When it first happens, you're freezing your butt off.
Yeah. Like, it's only
where you are.
Yeah. Especially where I'm living in the South, where we don't insulate our homes against cold. Like, it's only, like, it's literally only 62 degrees outside right now, and I've got a blanket on. But, anyway. Yeah, so, anyway. We'll start off doing recalling this week, as we always do, with recalling the shit that we ourselves were doing this week. And as always, we start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Today was the day where it broke out of the chilly streak, where mm-hmm. it was a nice high of 75 today. Mm. Though most of the week was in the 40s mm-hmm. previous to that, which was fine. Mm-hmm. I didn't even turn on my heat. That's how fine with it I was. Just never got that cold that I needed to bring that out. I did just bring out the like relaxing pants I have for home to keep myself as warm as I needed to.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're back out of that for a little bit here before we go back into some cold stuff. But
mm-hmm.
doing fine for the time being. So yeah, that's how it's going in here in Ohio.
Mm.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be pretty warm, at least for the next handful of days.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be nice. But for things I've been watching, haven't been watching too much. Did finish up She-Hulk, watched mm-hmm. the season finale, which is really good. They start to go down like an MCU kind of ending path mm-hmm. of like, oh, here's all the major characters you've seen, and they get in a big fight, and then She-Hulk's like, wait, what the fuck are we doing here? And like just leaves and goes to bust out of the Disney Plus dashboard,
mm-hmm.
go into like one of the shows they do that's like behind the scenes stuff, mm-hmm. and goes to like Disney headquarters or Marvel headquarters
mm-hmm.
to like figure out like what the fuck are we doing with the show here? Mm. We need to fix the way this is ending, kind of thing, and takes that to its logical extreme and gets to a different ending that is mm-hmm. Pretty well done. So, yeah, that was a fun series. I definitely recommend people checking that out, especially if you want something that's a bit out of the typical norm of what you see mm-hmm. on the MCU stuff. I'm curious to see if they're going to do a second season or whatever, but that's been mostly it for the watching stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For games, I've been playing some Vampire Survivors since that is now out of early access, hit 1.0. I've mm-hmm. Been playing some more of that, and yeah, they added a few more things for the launch. They've just been steadily adding content throughout the early access to the 1.0. It's just like, oh, we added some more achievements, and I think there's like Twitch chat integration, so you can have like Twitch chat mess with the game.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff. And some other new stuff. Endless mode, inverse mode.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of stuff there. So that is some good stuff. So I'm looking forward to putting some more time into that as I try to parse together like what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
It has like a big list of like all the achievements, then what that unlocks. And it's like, some of this unlocks other characters and other things in the game, that kind of stuff. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's a bit tough to kind of parse that.
Mm.
Kind of makes me think about starting over, like just resetting it all. But I don't know that I'll actually do that, because it'll be a pain in the butt to get back to where I am currently.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's been that for Vampire Survivors. The other game, Rocket League, they've got their Halloween event going on, mm-hmm. Which has a nice new limited time mode in the casual playlist, which is, I forget what they call it, but essentially it's like a spooky version of one of the maps, and the instead of a regular ball, it's kind of a squishy cube, pumpkin cube, so it just bounces very oddly for the way that people are used to playing this game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the fun thing. It's very infuriating for mm-hmm. somebody has instincts for the way a normal ball bounces, and this just does not. I think almost every single match I played of it.
Mm.
So that's just, I was happy to play as much as I needed to work on the event for the Halloween stuff, and then move on to some playing regular ass Rocket League so I can have some more skill at what I'm doing. So that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Patrick?
Yeah, Pat, what about you?
Well, I've said recently on this show that my return to Let's Weekend was part of a more multifaceted attempt to get back into content creation and just having a greater presence in this sphere altogether. And for one thing, I had a really good chat with Jeremy Irby, some of you know, this morning, and I feel like there was some movement on possibly a new podcast there, so I'm excited about that. And also, this week I made my return to YouTube in the form of a few sound off videos, with definitely more on the way. I've got recordings for two more videos, and then I've got plans for two more on top of that. And it's just, creative energy is fucking weird. You can go 5-6 years without feeling like doing anything, and then suddenly, if you aren't constantly creating something, you feel like you're going to pop. And right now I'm in the latter state, and my God, it's on the one hand, it's nice to be back doing this again, but I hate when my brain wakes me up at 4 a.m. with an idea that I have to get written down before I forget it. And I have to be up for work at 7. That's no fun. But right now I'm just enjoying all of this. I'm enjoying, putting my thoughts and my analyses of what's going on in the gaming industry out there. And, you know, I had one really long video. Well, by my standards, really long. It was 11 minutes about game development. And then I did a couple of shorter videos about Arcade 1-Up doing some questionable shit and how the Smash series is going to have to find a new way because Sakurai himself admitted that Smash Ultimate was really a licensing miracle that they would struggle to repeat. So, honestly, I said a lot of things in the Smash video that I thought would piss a lot of people off, but the response so far has been overwhelmingly positive, and I'm really happy about that. So we'll see where it goes from there. But yeah, that's been my week.
All right, Teresa, what about you?
Just another week of shit in this month of absolute shit. Last week I wasn't here because I caught RSV, and it absolutely kicked my ass. I lost all sense of taste and smell. And I was kind of like, when that happened, I was like, I don't think I can smell anything. Open up a bottle of bleach, stuck my nose in it, didn't smell a thing. Mm-hmm. So, I thought it was COVID. It wasn't. So I wasn't able to go to St. Louis last weekend. And then this week, just a lot of shit's been happening. The icing on the cake was that Scott got COVID while apparently he was in St. Louis. And
it's really a good thing you didn't go.
It really is. The jury's out on whether or not our kid has it. The at-home tests are showing negative, but there's something going on because the kid is just doing nothing but sleeping and complaining about a headache. And then coughing and, stuff like that. It's not like, anyway.
Could that be your RSV?
It could be. It could be. I should have been uncontagious a while ago, but, and I thought that I got whatever I had from my kid because, the day before I got sick, they were up at, Scott and the kid were up at, urgent care getting a test or immediate care getting a test and everything was negative. And the doctor's like, no, there's something viral going on here, but it must be just a cold. But Scott's car broke down the week before. It's just a never ending pile of shit. Yeah. But there's been some really good things that have happened this month overall. And one of them is that I am no longer a contract worker. They made me permanent. So I am super happy about that because it's not fun, like, going every 3 to 6 months or whatever and interviewing and all that shit.
Yeah.
Such a pain in the ass. So having some stability for a while will be great. Having benefits will be great. I asked for a day off, and And now I know that it's going to be a paid day off. So it's big. And then the ongoing thing with my brother's ex-wife, she is able to use a cell phone and to write things. She still has a tracheotomy with a breathing tube, but they're getting really close to pulling that out. So she's not dead. I mean, like, far from it. Which, you know, she's still in ICU, or no, she moved out of ICU yesterday. She had nurses coming in left and right and was like, we were sure you were a goner. We didn't think you were going to live at all. And they're like seasoned fucking ICU nurses.
Damn.
Right? So, that's pretty much it for not entertainment stuff. For gaming, there is nothing but Final Fantasy XIV. There will be nothing but Final Fantasy XIV for quite a while, I think.
Nothing wrong with that.
Right? Right. And our free company has a dance club now, and that's been fun to go to. I was there yesterday, and I was like really high last night. It's really fun to watch. Camera angles will get you lost for a long time. But as far as TV goes, we finished off Only Murders in the Building. We're really behind on that. And we finished off Rings of Power from Amazon. I have a lot to say, but this isn't the place to say it. I'm sure I'll be rewatching it. But otherwise, we're just going through the current season of Bob's Burgers and the one with Alanis Morissette, The Great Outdoors. No. Anyway, the one that's, you guys know what I'm talking about. It's on Hulu. The Great North. That's what it is. Great Outdoors was a John Candy movie, wasn't that?
I think it was.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
But yeah, there's some other stuff that we're watching here and there, like onesie twosie stuff, but really nothing worth mentioning except for one YouTube shenanigans thing. I watch a lot from this mortician named Caitlin, and she did something on the sinking of the Eastman, which happened in the Chicago River and was the greatest loss of life for you know, a ship accident, a water accident, like ever. And nobody really knows about it that much because there's nothing notable about it, I guess, unlike the Titanic, which was super romantic and everything. This was just a bunch of factory workers who ended up getting killed, like their whole families and everything, while they were going for a summer holiday that the company put together for them. But YouTube said that it went against their community rules, and, you know, her team had spent months putting this together, and it got pulled down. So I was really glad to see it before it got pulled down, but I think if you search for it, you could still find it, but it's just not, like, showing up on her YouTube channel. So, yeah, that's kind of annoying. But, yeah, the Eastman disaster is interesting if anybody wants to look up on it. There's your rabbit hole for me. And that's it.
All right. Well, as for me, I am still playing Cyberpunk 2077 and still very much enjoying it. I recently managed to get Johnny Silverhand's old band Samurai back together for a one-time gig. It was awesome. Amongst a bunch of other things. So, like, one of the things that you do in this game is basically, and it's, if you've watched Cyberpunk Edgerunners, it's a topic that they bring up in that anime, too. And actually, it's a fairly sort of common motif through the old Cyberpunk RPG, which is the concept of cyberpsychos. Basically, it's, there's this view in the Cyberpunk universe that the more you start adding on cybernetic implants, new cybernetic limbs, cybernetic extensions, it basically eats away at your humanity, and eventually it eats away at your mental health, until eventually you just snap. And basically in Cyberpunk 2077, one of the fixers that you work for, a former reporter named Regina Jones, has hooked up with this organization where she's trying to start a study where they can try and find out, like, what if they can narrow down what the actual cause of cyberpsychosis actually is. And so to do this, one of the main things that you do in the game is you go around Night City trying to find reported cyberpsychos and neutralizing them somehow. If you can, you know, usually the best thing you can do is usually you can get them down to the point where they're incapacitated so you don't have to kill them. And if you do that, that usually means that you get a higher payload afterwards. But like the actual stories behind them are usually pretty fucked up. So like one of the last ones I did was what appeared at first to be like the remains of like a like somebody was doing like a wedding photo shoot, and then a cyberpsycho showed up and murdered the whole group. Until you actually get there and you manage to incapacitate the cyberpsycho, and then you find out it's actually a part of like a reality show, and that the individual who was who turned out to be the cyberpsycho was one of the actresses who was supposed to have their like military cybernetic implants activate at a certain point when the script called for it, until unfortunately it did too early and she ended up slaughtering the entire cast, the director, the producer, and basically everyone else that was on set. So when you actually get there,
as one does.
Yeah. And so when you actually get there, there's a bunch of people there that are like got like their phones out and are, you know, shooting, you know, getting pictures of it while you get down there. And basically, yeah, it's just like that. That's actually one of the lighter ones. Some of them are unbelievably dark. Like, you know, one's like, you know, starting to undergo a psychotic break because of like some faulty implant that's starting to mess with them. And they've run out of the pharmaceutical drug that helps keep it out, and they're sort of in a desperate way, and they just snap and they end up killing a bunch of police officers. Oh yeah. Shit like that. It's Night City, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody gets out of Night City alive. It eventually just chews you up and spits you out.
Usually into a dumpster.
Into a dumpster or one of the fetid pools of water that holds a lot of bodies. Yeah. So I've been playing that. I am sort of pecking away at Scorn as well. Like I said, when I first started that game really had trouble like communicating what it was at first, because it's not really a shooter, even though it has shooter mechanics in it. It is more than anything else a sort of environmental puzzle game. And the puzzles can be weirdly obtuse, mostly because of how alien the landscape is and how alien the mechanisms you encounter are. It does try to like communicate what you're looking for, but even from the beginning there are parts like you're kind of having to make a guess. And the actual puzzles get more complicated pretty much from the beginning. And the environments are actually fairly large and fairly detailed. So it can sometimes be difficult to find out what exactly it is you're supposed to interact with. It's a lot of trial and error, I won't lie. Let's see. What else? Oh, yeah, I watched a little movie you may or may not heard of called Wild Zero.
Mm-mm.
For those of you who don't know, this is a Japanese B-movie starring Guitar Wolf. Which, if you don't know who Guitar Wolf are, they're like a old-school like Japanese punk band that are known for like having like a old-school sort of Yankee biker gang look to them. And basically the whole plot is that a bunch of aliens show up and, you know, bring back the dead for some reason. You know, it's basically the plot to Plan 9 from Outer Space. But the main plot is about this guy named Ace, who's this dude who's, you know, the typical shonen protagonist. You know, the likable dumbass. who is a huge fan of Guitar Wolf, and he goes to one of their shows. And while he's there, he, after the their concert, does the band, the Guitar Wolf, the band themselves go up to the guy who owns the club, and the guy who owns this club is this lunatic crime lord who regularly abuses women, and they're like, dude, you're a piece of shit, and they, like, draw a gun on him. There's, like, a Mexican standoff where they're both, like, you know, pointing their guns at each other. And then Ace just sort of comes in the room out of nowhere and gets just knocked the fuck out by the crime boss's security guard. And it gives the Guitar Wolf guys just long enough that they can shoot the gun out of the other dude's hand and take a bunch of his fingers with it.
Jesus.
And, yeah. So they decide that you know, because he was willing to go in there and defend them during this violent scene, there was like, you know what, this guy's cool, so we're going to make him a blood brother. So they do the whole, you know, cut the hand so that you can mash in. Yeah. Intermittent. They said, and then if you're ever in trouble, use this. And they give him this little whistle on like a necklace. And through the rest of the movie, basically, when Guitar Wolf shows up in their concerts, they're like, they've got like fire shooting out of the microphones and electricity coming off their instruments, because basically they're basically insanely powerful through the power of rock. And basically, whenever, you know, Ace needs them, he blows the whistle and they show up and kick ass. It makes absolutely zero freaking sense, but it's an amazing movie. It's a lot of fun. What else? Oh, yeah. I talked a lot about J-Rock Japan rabbit hole and started listening to some of Hide's work, his solo work, yep. Which if you've never heard Hide's solo work out, you know, outside of his stuff with X Japan, his solo work is very different to the stuff he did when he was with X Japan. X Japan was a pretty straight, fairly more or less straightforward heavy metal band by, you know, their standards, because when they started out, they were pretty much unlike any other band that existed at that time period. They were basically doing both hair metal and thrash metal at the same time, which was something you just did not do. Hide's solo stuff, on the other hand, was very much in like the industrial and alternative rock scene. And in a lot of stuff he was doing like years before a lot of these other guys were doing it. So he's in many ways a very much a trailblazer in a lot of ways. What I did not realize is I watched concert film of his first solo tour back in, I think it was like 1994. And it is freaking insanity. he is basically, it's got a lot of serious punk energy with it. And yeah, it's really weird seeing Hide as like a front man rather than just a guitar player. Because he does not pick up a guitar for, like, the first few songs. He's literally just the singer. And it's crazy. The whole thing starts out with him doing this thing where he's, like, he's wearing, like, this weird, like, fat old man costume. Where he's, like, a voice scrambler, and he's like introducing all the other and making it like super awkward. I actually did not know that Pata from X Japan was actually in his backing band. I actually did not know that, but,
makes sense.
And yeah. And then he shows up, he rips the costume off, and he's got like this weird wrapping around his face, and he's like got like an umbrella and this like inflatable dinosaur that spews water that he's throwing into the audience. And actually, I say it now that I think of it, it probably must have been Godzilla, but And it's like, you know, he did this song, one of his from his first solo album called Frozen Bug, where he's got this dude who's like dressed as a caterpillar that crawls onto the stage and then crawls up P-Day's back and then sprouts butterfly wings and shit. And it's it's crazy. oh God, I miss that dude so much. Is just
was crazy. He putting Bowie on blast yet?
Huh? Oh, no, he was still doing his like old like giant pink hair Visual K phase. So no, he didn't start doing that until like 96.
Yeah, he didn't do that. Yeah, he did the Bowie diss track with Zilch. I remember now.
Yeah, that was like a year before he died. So
yeah, and that was a weird track too, because it was actually Drain from X Japan, just with new lyrics.
Yeah, that was actually Drain was actually on their last, if I remember correctly, Dahlia. Yeah. And like
such a good album,
and very reminiscent again of his solo, because it's that whole album is very like as like. All of X Japan's albums are worth listening to, but that one in particular is extremely varied. So there was that. And, I got kind of sick of being an observer as far as, the left-wing movement was concerned. And I was like, I need to actually join an organization and start contributing. So, I joined the IWW, that's the Industrial Workers of the World, or the Wobblies, as they're sometimes known. I'm officially a dues-paying member, and I asked them, like, what can I do? What can I do to, contribute to the movement and help the organization? He's like, well, you're kind of out in the middle of bumfuck nowhere, and the closest, branch to you is in Atlanta.
If that's the actual verbiage they use, I already love them.
No, that actually was not them. That was me. Because the way the story went was I was on another Discord server with a group of other people, like-minded individuals. And I told them, look, guys, I'm sick of the terminally online left. I hate it. I hate it so much. I hate all of the gaslighting and I hate to use this phrase, but it's true, virtue signaling and this sort of moral one-uppance shit and the constant trying to be prolier or holier than thou. And after the whole like pet sock MAGA communism bullshit that happened, I was like, that's it. I'm throwing in the towel. I wanted to make this a better place, but I can't do shit. This place is lost. I might as well actually, I'm like, I gotta actually contact some actual organizers like out in the real world that are actually doing work, because I can't take this shit anymore. I'm going nuts with this isolation. I feel like a pilgrim in an unholy land. I know that that's incredibly condescending, but that's how it feels. And he was like,
well, it's easy to feel that way when that's the reality of it.
Yeah. And he's like, look, dude, don't worry about it. I think I can help. I know some people, and this guy I was talking to, he lives in South Georgia. And he's like, look, I'm also kind of isolated, but I do work with the IWW and I helped like organize some union stuff in like North Florida from like where I at. So, I'm pretty sure I can get you in contact with someone and I might be able to do something. He said, all right. I said, all right. So he got back and he said, okay, call this dude. He's with the, he's in Deanville in Atlanta. He's one of the heads of the branch there. And talk to him. He's really cool. He's really laid back. He can probably help you. So I did. I did that Monday. And I called. Well, actually, no. I called him Friday of last week. And I told him, look, man, I got, I just told him. I bared my soul to him. Look, man, I'm dedicated to this cause, but I can't do anything from where I'm at. And the only connection I've got through the wider, movement is through places like Reddit and Twitter and Facebook. He's like, and I'm telling him, it's like, do you understand what I'm talking about? Yeah, I do. He's like, don't worry about it, dude. He's like, do you want to join? I was like, yeah, I want to join. Like, look, man, I got to tell you, I'm kind of hurting for cash right now, but I want to. He's like, that's cool. We got like a really lower tier, like just $6 a month for membership for people who are currently going through economic issues or whatever. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. He's like, all right, just do that and then get back to me. And I think maybe I can help you with something. So that's what we ended up doing. And he said, okay, I know what you can do. So we get a bunch of people who, you know, want to sign up all the time, but for whatever reason, maybe they changed phones or they just lost interest or, you know, they wanted to do somewhere else or maybe they moved out of state or whatever. We've got this list of reconnects. He's like, here's what you can do. Just get on your phone, you know, and just, you know, text out these reconnects to these people. Try to do at least two of them a day, maybe eight of them a week. And I was like, yeah, sure, I can do that. And that's what I've been doing.
Nice.
You know, and he called back and he said, yeah, I've been, by the way, just we actually managed to reconnect with some of those people because of you. So it is working. So, you know, I'm actually contributing. It feels great.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's me. Anybody got anything they want to add before we move on? Anybody? Mueller?
Get Ballistic NG on Steam if you haven't already, and if you like Wipeout.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Alrighty then. Well, in that case, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And so it's October, which means Halloween is soon to be upon us, as I said earlier, if Santa doesn't poke his ass into it. There's one thing about Halloween that we all love to do, which is watch a scary movie. Now, do you guys, I know this is probably also the case for a lot of you guys, are all sort of centered around the same age group. Do you guys remember when we were younger and there was like a panic about gory horror movies?
I don't really remember that.
No.
Should have been. Was somebody that got my mom into that.
No, my mom was the one who, had her bedroom floor just littered with issues of Fangoria, so I'm pretty sure that wouldn't have found its way to me.
Damn, your mom was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My mom was mean making me watch all that scary shit.
Well, the point is, if you lived like in the South in a relatively religious neighborhood, like I did, well, there was definitely a moral panic about the gory movies. And there's always this sort of thing. It's like, you know, back in my day, movies were so gory and grisly. And I bet, you know, back in the old days, it was a lot more, you know, dignified. And it was all suggestion. You know, they never showed actual gore on, you know, in movies or on stage or whatever. Yeah, I can tell you just from what I've studied that that's absolute bullshit. let me put it this way. Way back in like the Elizabethan and Jacobean era, there was a bunch of theater plays that were specifically based around showing off awful gore shit.
Oh boy.
Specifically one of them by Shakespeare. It's one of his more obscure plays, but it's definitely, it was also one of his earlier ones. It's a play called Titus Andronicus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, some of you may have seen the film version.
Yeah, didn't it get pulled or something, and it was really hard to find and super rare for a while, the DVD.
Yeah, it was. And, of course, that movie famously has the version where a meat pie to his family and friends, and it ends up being a meat pie made of people. Yeah. But that's like an example. But you know, that type of thing was kind of died down, you know, after Elizabethan and Jacobean era, because you know the Puritans came in and all that stuff. But it didn't go away outside of England, especially in places like France. And it's specifically there I wanted to specifically talk about, because in France. Not only, especially from the late 19th century to the middle of the 20th century, there was actually a theater. Like, and by theater, I don't mean like the medium of theater. I mean like an actual theater that specifically existed whose whole point was to show these very naturalistic, often extremely graphic horror plays that were famously, like the guys who famously ran it said that, you know, they considered success by how many people ended up passing out in the audience from the plays that they put on. It was called the Grand Guignol. It was a play. It was a theater that was located in the Pig Alley district of Paris. The theater itself, like the building, actually still exists. It's called the International Visual Theater now. But back in its day, during its old history, it was called the Grand Guignol. Well, its full name was La Théâtre du Grand Guignol. It was founded in 1897 by one Oscar Metanier. And basically, he originally planned it as a space for naturalist performances. For those of you who don't know, in the mid to late 19th century, in literature, there was this huge movement towards naturalism. And by naturalism, that doesn't necessarily mean that they avoided like supernatural or fantastical elements. It meant that they embraced realism for its own sake. And by that, I mean all that reality had to. Do you understand?
Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah.
In contrast to like the more romantic notions that you would see in like old school theater, where everything is very, I don't want to say trite and airy, but you've seen Shakespeare before, right? Mm-hmm. You get what I mean. So, you know, you had, you know, writers like, for example, Emile Zola, for example, was very much a part of the naturalist movement. And on top of his, you know, prolific novel career, he also wrote several plays for natural theater. Now, the venue that this was actually originally a chapel. So when you went into the theater, you would see, among other things, boxes, you know, the theater boxes, which looked like confessionals.
Mm-hmm.
Area where the orchestra, you know, typically would be. There were these two statues of weeping angels overlooking it. So it's like, we're doing this. it's like, you get the idea. And the thing was, supposedly because of some of the fault in the architecture, there would be leaks in the roof. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it would look like the weeping angels were actually crying tears.
Oh my God.
Yeah. and also, it was not really insulated against the heat. So it could be stiflingly hot in this building during the summer, which just,
oh man,
yeah, it really built up the atmosphere. And there was all kinds of like gothic structures and opaque furniture all over on the walls, that gave it like this real like gothic feeling to it. When you went to the Grand Guignol, you didn't go just to see a show, you went to have an experience. And, you know, the architecture was a big part of it. And, you know, basically the people who went there the same reason people, you know, become huge fans of horror cinema, because they want to get that rush out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here's the thing. If you've ever read about like how old school, like working class theater was, especially back in Elizabeth, you know that generally when these plays were happening, there wasn't like a hushed silence in the venue happening. Like there were, you know, it was the people in the audience were generally themselves a lot as well. And the same was here in the Grand Guignol in the 19th century. Sometimes it could get so rousing that even the actors would sometimes have to break character and say, keep it down there in there, you know? So one of the things that the Grand Guignol is most famous for is they were one of the pioneers in a particular branch of what we call modern practical effects. Specifically, in trying to show ways in how you mutilate the human body. It basically, they were huge, like, they were major, like, you know, sort of like pioneers in having effects like, say, cutting out an eyeball or chopping off a limb or melting a person's face.
Yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, so like, okay, so you went to the Grand Guignol. Plays would you be seeing? Well, basically, you would see an anthology of like five or six relatively short pieces, all of which were basically meant to exhibit the like brutal naturalistic ideals of the theater itself. So they were all usually horror. Sometimes there would be like on occasion, like maybe a darkly humorous piece or a piece that was a little racy and risque, but mostly it was horror plays. And the type of horror plays that they did was very specific. They never used any kind of supernatural type of devices. It was always about stuff like, you know, insane asylums, gruesome murders, mad scientists doing human experimentation, stuff like that. And what they would do is they would alternate the horror plays with some dark comedies. So that they literally referred to it as hot and cold shower. That's actually the phrase that they used to refer to how these happened. Among the stories that they had, would be like, for example, here's some examples of some plays that they had. There was one that was called Le Laboratoire des Hallucinations that was written by Mr. Andrew Delord. And Delord is important because he wrote the vast majority of the plays that were exhibited in the Grand Guignol Theater, about 150 of them. And he was one of, and this one in particular is essentially a doctor who finds his wife's lover, because she's having an affair with a person. He finds out that the guy she's having an affair with is in his operating room. So he decides to perform a very graphic brain surgery, rendering the adulterer a hallucinating semi-zombie. But then when he wakes up, he's now insane. So he takes a hammer and chisel and hammers the chisel into the doctor's brain. So the special effects included things like a fairly realistic open skull, you know, open scalp of a person with a mushy brain thing inside of it, which could then be closed up. And then, you know, there was the chisel, and the guy would, like, you know, the doctor, after he had the thing chiseled, he would, like, be holding it to his head, and there'd be blood spurting out, and he's like, ah! The blood might spurt out onto the audience or whatever. Probably one of the most famous was one called Un Crime dans une Mansion de Fou, which was also a Delord piece. And it was about a couple of women in an insane asylum these two older women discover this young, pretty inmate who is convinced that she's the daughter of God. So in jealousy, they decide to take a pair of scissors to blind her. Unfortunately, what they don't know is that she, in her rage, ends up discovering who they are, and she ends up taking one of them and forcing their face into a furnace, which then turning around to the audience so you could see the gross after effect of like the skull and the burning flesh and everything and stuff like that.
Brutal.
Uh-huh. And there was also another play by a gentleman, Lavelle, who is actually important because he was one of the few outside writers that would occasionally work for Grand Guignol. He actually had like an actual career as like an actual writer. And he was a popular writer for the newspapers, you know, these very macabre stories that you would expect for something for the Grand Guignol. And in fact, there's actually a collection of his stories online that's you can buy at Amazon called, let's see, I'm trying to remember. It's called 30 Hours with a Corpse and Other Tales of the Grand Guignol. It's published back in 2016. And it's basically about a young woman who visits the man, a woman who shows up and says she's wearing like a bunch of tape over her face, and she's going to this man who previously had disfigured her face with acid. And she like takes off the medical tape and, you know, shows herself off the face, and the people are like, oh God, it's awful. And she ends up doing the exact same thing to him. She takes the thing of acid and dumps it on his face. This is theater. I want to remind people. Okay.
Yeah.
This isn't like some midnight movie at a cinema. This is an actual theater in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the dramatic arts. This particular institution existed from 1897 until it closed down for good in 1962. So it was actually like this thing actually endured for a long time. During the time it existed, it had a lot of famous people. It had a lot of famous people who would sometimes come, as tourists to see the plays, who enjoyed them, or people who lived for Paris at the time who would go to see them and enjoy their experience. One of them was a Vietnamese gentleman who would later go on to be the man we know as Ho Chi Minh.
Huh.
Yeah, he was a fan of the Grand Guignol, as it basically, when people ask, like, what was it that finally brought the thing to its knees? Well, the obvious reason, of course, would be, well, movies came along, you know? Movies came along and basically killed the theater. But a lot of the management actually said that they thought that the real reason was simply that, you know, it was 1962 and they were now about, 15 to 18 years away from the end of World War II. And, you know, after people saw what the Nazis did in the Holocaust, it's like the final director, Charles Nonan, literally said, we could never equal Buchenwald. You know, before the war, everyone felt that what was happening on stage was impossible. Now we know that these things and worse are absolutely possible in reality.
Yep.
So that was the Grand Guignol. Now, the thing is, even though the Grand Guignol itself is gone, the actual like Grand Guignol plays are still very much something that you can access. And there are touring theater companies that do, you know, collections of Grand Guignol pieces, you know. So that was the Grand Guignol. And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. And now you know that the hunger for gore is as old as human civilization, basically. Mm-hmm. All right. So, with that out of the way, it is now to move on to the show proper. As always, with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is none other than now former Prime Minister of the UK, Liz Truss, who resigned just 6 weeks after getting the job because she sucks. And nobody in her party likes her anymore.
Yeah, this is kind of a wild thing to happen. It seems like the prime ministers are lasting less and less at this point.
Yeah.
I saw somebody joking, being like, oh yeah, going to the, like putting all this on a chart. And like, soon enough, by like next March, prime ministers will last a matter of seconds their position. So yeah, that's kind of, she had like multiple cabinet members resigning because they were tired of her shit. And mm-hmm. she was brought on to fix the economy and
killed it, basically, or at least mortally wounded it. Like literally the first thing she did as soon as she assumed the position was to proposed a bunch of these, like, you know, these very like American style supply side economic reforms, basically
trickle down economics.
Yes, a bunch of tax cuts for the rich, and it immediately screwed up their economy. Like, I mean, their economy wasn't doing very well already because of, you know, on top of the shit that happened with COVID, but also Brexit. And, you know, I would like to tell people, like, this is what, you know, like, this by itself should forever, you know, disprove any of this trickle-down bullshit ever and forever and ever and would never be taken seriously again. But it won't.
Yeah, it should stain this party forever.
Yeah.
They, like, people should not be voting for the Tories because they've had power for a number of years and have not done anything of importance that improved anybody's lives.
Yeah.
It's only, like, not fucked up, like, their health system to the degree that it gets to be, like, ours or anything like that.
Yeah. Can but you believe now that there's, can you believe now that they missed Tony Blair, of all people?
Yeah, I wasn't paying attention to British politics. Like, what was the thing that, like, happened with him that poisoned them against left-leaning politics?
The Iraq War is what happened.
Yeah, but the British don't care about anything that happens outside of their country.
They did this one because they ended up putting a bunch of money towards it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Also, just in general, he was kind of a prick. He's the guy responsible for quote-unquote New Labour, which is basically just turning the Labour Party into more like the American Democrats.
Yeah.
In all the worst ways possible.
Also, I would say the Tories that have been in power over the last 4 or 5 years are all pricks.
Yeah.
Very much out of touch, the vast majority of them.
Yeah.
And guess who wants to put their hat in the ring?
Oh, Bojo wants to come back. Yeah.
And I think that even tanked the economy even more.
Yeah.
So you're like, no, that's the guy we got rid of.
Yeah.
Fuck him. But he may still have enough loyal people in Parliament to get him back in.
Not last I checked. It looks like of the 200-something members of the party that are voting on who the next prime minister should be, it looks like, what's his name, Riza Kuvak or whatever, or her name or whatever, is the person they're wanting.
Yeah, but they keep talking about he can get 100 people to vote for him.
They know that there's, like, 58 already.
Yeah, it's like, didn't you just get rid of this guy for a very specific reason?
Yeah.
Why would you take that poison pill again?
Yeah.
Versus the guy that ran against Liz Truss, lost, now is like the least bad person in all of this?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Yeah. I swear, the UK has only had 3 women prime ministers in its entire history, and they've all been off.
Yeah. It's like if we actually got rid of Trump, like, 6 months in, and now we're on, you know, Roger Stone.
Yeah.
As our next president in line. It's like, how the fuck did we get here?
Yeah.
How do we say this is the right person?
Yeah. And in the meantime, the Labour Party doesn't really back their heels and drink their cups of tea and say, and just whistle innocently.
Right.
Like, yeah. Just occasionally raise their hand. It's like, what's about snap election? You know, let the people vote. Might be an idea. Just
and remove all of rolling. All of the Tories out of here because none of them work.
Yeah. But yeah, from now on, you know, when it comes to the trickle and shit, we look at the UK.
Yeah.
You want that to happen here? Because that's what's going to happen here. But yeah, so Liz Truss is out. Bojo wants. We don't know who's going to be prime minister until then. She's just sort of sitting in the seat until the next person comes along. But
yeah, that cat is like the mouser. The official mouser is like outlasted 4 prime ministers now.
Yeah.
And a queen, I guess.
Mm. And I think it has to be important to remind people, unlike in, you know, our system where we directly elect these individuals, in parliamentary systems, at least in most of the cases, you actually vote for the party, and the party themselves decides who's going to be the leader.
I don't like that.
So, you know, it's a problem. You know,
I
mean, to be honest, there are a lot of things about democracy that I prefer.
It could have saved us a lot of trouble, though.
Yeah, like there are a lot of things about democracy I prefer over our system, but that's not one of them.
Yeah, and the media's been having fun in her wake.
Yeah,
posted this video in the chat that aired on their news, I guess,
mm-hmm.
where they essentially used her favorite song being Taylor Swift's Blank Space. and use that to put over various clips of her in her short run to make essentially an official fan cam for Liz Truss.
Yeah.
Which is quintessential British dry humor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Love
turn
it.
Into internet humor, too.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so.
If you don't need a glass of water afterwards, it's not my kind of humor.
Yeah. Next up, from Richmond, is this Vermont or Virginia?
Yeah.
Vermont? Okay. So do you guys have anyone in your family who is into that whole conspiracy theory about fluoride in the water?
Probably.
Not a family member, but yeah, someone I know is.
All right, so you guys know what fluoride is, right?
Yeah,
it's a fairly benign chemical that's in drinking water that, you know, helps promote teeth, you know, dental health, basically. Makes your teeth stronger, you know, especially, and, you know, when you regularly brush them, it, you know, it makes it better against cavities, tooth decay, all that stuff. But pretty much since they started doing it, there's always been this weird sort of freak conspiracy contingent who are convinced that it's doing some kind of like it's, you know, it's making us weaker, or it's poisoning us, or it's causing mind control or whatever. Well, recently an employee...
Yeah, the medical community says that it's good for you, therefore there must be something the matter with it.
Yeah. Well, there was this guy in Richmond, Virginia, in Richmond, Vermont, who was kind of in charge of putting fluoride in their water.
Uh-oh.
And he actually resigned because it turned out he'd been gradually lowering the amount of fluoride in their water for over a decade.
Yeah, this involves...
That's not okay.
Yeah.
This involves their water superintendent, Kendall Chamberlain,
mm-hmm.
who disclosed in his 5-page resignation letter, never fuck up so bad you have to write 5 pages about how bad you fucked up.
Yeah.
How sorry you are about that.
That's not a resignation. That's a friggin' term paper.
Yeah,
it sounds to me like a simple, okay, I will kindly fuck off would have sufficed.
Yeah, because apparently he had said that it had been nearly 4 years, but instead it's been over a decade,
mm-hmm.
that he had been, he had lowered the fluoride levels in the water below what the state recommends,
mm-hmm.
For this, let's see. He said in his letter, in language that at times echoes unfounded reports that have circulated online in recent years, he doesn't think the current fluoridation policy is legally required or scientifically sound, and in his opinion poses unacceptable risks to public health.
Yeah.
I cannot in good conscience be a party to this. And he wrote that he's never received a negative job review, has each day accurately measured the fluoride levels in the water, mm-hmm. has provided monthly written reports that were approved and signed by the town manager and submitted to 2 state agencies.
Mm.
Which seems to also suggest like there are people not actually paying attention to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're just like rubber stamping this. Like, yeah, sure, that seems okay.
You can convince me of that too.
Mm-hmm.
He contends that fluoridation is voluntary, that the amounts are not mandated. Fluoridating municipal water is voluntary. Towns that do must maintain levels within the state's recommendations to submit monthly reports to the state health department. The Vermont Health Department did not immediately return an email seeking comment on Chamberlain's resignation or his new assertions about the length of time fluoride levels mm-hmm. have been out of range. But yeah, now they have, you know, a replacement in who's actually putting it back to where it should be.
Mm-hmm.
The original news that the fluoride had been reduced for nearly 4 years, much shorter than what was revealed in his resignation letter, Shocked some residents and area doctors who raised concerns about misinformation, dental health, and government transparency. So it's not a decision for Chamberlain to make alone.
Not at all.
And yeah, that's been routine in communities across the U.S. since the 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
I think New Jersey is the big state that doesn't do it. There might be a couple others, but I think New Jersey is the one that's most famously doesn't put fluoride in their water. So,
and we can all see the fruits of it, can't we?
Yeah.
And I think they had just had their kids take fluoride pills every once in a while to make up for that. But yeah, but in the recommended amounts, fluoride in water decreases cavities or tooth decay by about 25%.
Yep.
Which reported, the CDC reported in 2018 that 73% of U.S. population was served by water systems with adequate fluoride to protect teeth.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this guy failed to do the one thing he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Only job.
Yeah. Well,
so it seems like there should be more checks on this stuff.
Yeah, there should.
I bet they're coming.
Someone should have read those reports, and maybe those should be available online so people, doctors and such, would be like, oh yeah, this seems right. Mm-hmm. They're not going to do it themselves.
Yeah. Yep. Next up in our assholes of the week, Steve Bannon is going to prison for 4 months for contempt of commerce. Chris.
I struggle to call this a win because he's just going to get a 4 month vacation in Club Fed.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
4 months incarceration and $6,500 fine for criminal contempt of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Judge said he's prepared to let Bannon remain free while he appeals his convictions, as Bannon is unlikely to flee or pose a danger to the community. But he's basically just started yelling as soon as he got out. Yeah, basically saying like, yeah, they're... I'm trying to see if they got actual quotes here. Not sure. I don't think I see any. The ones I saw were basically calling this, trumped up charges and all this. That, he's going to appeal and get that overturned or whatever. And it's like, no, it's pretty cut, clear case there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Republicans are like, what about Eric Holder? Which is like this.
The first two words out of their mouth will always be, what about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's like, well, you guys let him go. So good for you, I guess.
Mm-hmm. All right.
This is an era of consequences.
Yeah. Speaking of consequences, two more LA City Council members have been forced to resign after racist remarks were leaked.
Yeah, these are the other two that were a part of that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Acting Council President Mitch O'Farrell remove Gil Cedillo and Kevin DeLeon from committee chairmanships and assignments and name them instead to a board that rarely meets as he turned up the heat on the veteran Democratic politicians.
Mm-hmm.
I said here, these members have lost all credibility, all standing.
Mm-hmm.
The two men have refused widespread calls to step down despite widespread condemnation. That led former council president Nuri Martinez to resign last week.
Mm-hmm.
So they've basically been put in the kid zone.
Mm-hmm.
So like, oh, you guys can sit here and think about what you did until you either quit or your remaining time runs out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And finally, Elon Musk has 75% of Twitter employees once he takes over.
Yeah.
Because that's what he does.
Yeah, he's not going to make money by paying people to work for him.
Yeah.
That's now he's going to make that money back.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also going to have, a hugely negative effect on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are going to be people helping to, combat attacks on, their account system and their security,
mm-hmm.
Spam and the various bots and all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
He hates the bots so much, but he wants to get rid of the people that help try to keep it at bay.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it seems like he's going to largely just try and cut it down from let's see, about 7,500 to just over 2,000 in its workforce. Which you can maybe argue they didn't need 7,500, but to 2,000 is probably an extreme drop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know it's all coming out of moderation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But all right. Well, fortunately, it's not all bad because week, and the first one is that the site to apply for student loan relief is live, and it's pretty simple. Kind of. Because there was a little hiccup that happened recently because apparently there was a judge that's kind of put some of this stuff on hold. I don't know. But anyway, Chris?
Yeah, they put up the site. Let's see. Yeah, it's still alive.
Yeah.
So as I can see, all you have to do basically is just put in your name, mm-hmm. Maybe former last name if you've married and changed it or whatever, social security numbers, date of birth, phone number, email, and then do your name and all that at the end to submit it, and I believe you'll get some sort of notification that you've been approved.
Nice.
Pretty simple. Up to 20,000 for federal Pell Grant recipients and 10,000 for non-Pell Grant recipients.
Yeah.
And you have until the end of 2023 to get this in.
Nice.
Yep.
All right. Fantastic. And finally, Mackenzie Scott has donated $84.5 million to the Girl Scouts.
Yeah. Trying to give away as much of that Bezos money as she can.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, she's rich enough that it'll accrue just as fast, seemingly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's donated $84.5 million to Girl Scouts of the USA and 29 of its local branches.
Mm.
It's the largest donation the Girl Scouts have received from an individual since their founding in 1912. Mm. The funds will help the organization recover from the impact of the pandemic, which drove down membership. The Girl Scouts plan to support volunteers and staff, make camp properties more resilient to the impacts of climate change, improve science and technology education for youth members, and develop diversity and inclusion programming to make their troops more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And the Girl Scout Council in Southern Arizona decided to use the $1.4 million it received from Scott to elevate the work they are doing rather than to start a new program or initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Accelerates their plan to hire more staff to reach most places in the 7 counties they serve in under an hour, provide programming year-round, a lot of stuff, a lot of good stuff.
Because
The Girl Scouts are a good organization, the Boy Scouts are an awful organization.
Mm.
So there you go.
Yep.
All right. So that's the end of the show proper. And we basically had to dedicate a whole section to this guy because, honestly, if we put him in the assholes of the week, it would pretty much be half the show. Kanye West and his very bad, no good, bad week. So Kanye has, well, I would say Kanye has gone off the rails, but that ship sailed a hell of a long time ago.
Yeah, he is not well.
People should stop using the mental health excuse, because he has way more access to help than most people, and he's chosen not to use it and just decided to be an asshole instead.
Yeah, that's part of it, but it's also yes men and people around him who seem to also be exacerbating it for
he's
their
gotten
own
rid of anybody that,
yeah but
gotten rid also, of anybody that could try to get sensed into him.
Yeah, but basically, it all went off when he was going on Twitter, and it was like they had just recently reinstated his Twitter privileges, or was it Facebook? It was one of those. And basically, he just immediately, the very first thing he did was just go off a weird anti-Semitic tirade about how he was going to go DEFCON 5, or DEFCON. He was supposed to say DEFCON, as in DEFCON.
But he's stupid, so...
Yeah.
This is what you get.
He went on this weird anti-Semitic tirade about how the Jews are evil, and that he's anti-Semitic because blacks are the true Jews, and something... It's that very particularly odd strain of anti-Semitism that unfortunately is not unheard of in the Black community. And unfortunately, because he also has these ties to the alt-right as well, it kind of feeds into that as well. And whenever people keep trying to say, it's like, dude, just can you just say something? He will not back down. He just keeps doubling down and doubling down. And this week, everything just kind of went just sideways. First, he announced that he just wants to buy Parler for some reason. Parler for the
birth. Well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
So he's been hanging out with Candace Owens.
Oh, God.
Of course he has.
Which convinced him to make White Lives Matter shirts, I guess, for his brand. But you know who her husband is?
The guy who runs Parler.
Yeah, the CEO of Parler.
Yeah.
So it seems like part of that seems to be like, hey, there's this great company called Parler. You know, it's doing really well. Just not. I think right around the news that this was happening, it sent out some sort of promotional email to people. And instead of BCCing people, they CC'd people. So enough replies and people got a hold of emails for most of the people on the platform, including like VIPs and execs and all that. It's like, oh, great job. You committed social media sin number one of never doing anything but BCCing people so that they don't get those emails. And also people were talking about like the amount of people they have on their platform, and it's like 25% of what it was a year ago. Something like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you want to talk about Nazi shit, you go to Truth Social.
Yeah, which also isn't doing very well.
Yeah, but that's where Trump is complaining all the time. Yeah, he seems to want to purchase Parler because it's the uncancelable free speech platform, which is like, I guess, in that that's where all the terrible people are.
Yeah.
And you know he can
either that they're either
own
on
it
that
and never or, get banned from it because he owns
either
it.
That or they're on Gab, one of those.
Yeah, he created an account on Parler and he has 8,000 followers, which I believe he has like 30 million followers on Twitter.
And I'm pretty sure a bunch of them are bots, but that's
probably that's what happens when you're a big enough person on Twitter.
Yeah.
Also, conveniently be like, oh, that's more than there are Jews in the world. I wonder how that happened.
Gee, I wonder.
But yeah.
And then after that, he went on, was it some podcast or something? And they brought up the George Floyd thing.
Drink Champs podcast.
And he went on this weird tirade about how George Floyd died from being on fentanyl. You know, rather than
And then like the cop wasn't really on his neck.
I've seen the footage.
It's like they went to court all over this.
He was convicted of first degree manslaughter.
Yeah. Now the family is suing him.
Yeah.
So, like potentially like a $250 million in damages for harassment, misappropriation, defamation, and infliction of emotional distress. Kanye has a big enough platform that's probably going to do pretty well for them.
So you've been wondering, it's like, okay, doing all this awful shit and he's saying these terrible things, when's he going to stop having, you know, have his sponsorship stop disappearing? And well, one of them dropped this week. How do you pronounce that?
Balenciaga.
Yeah, Balenciaga. They were the very first brand to drop him after his repeated anti-Semitic comments.
Yeah, I think that's a Final Fantasy spell at some point.
Well, I would ask Pat. I don't know if he's back.
Yeah. That's the way that their naming convention tends to go. That or Persona.
Yeah. Yeah. You're pretty close. Yeah, but yeah.
It's a big fashion brand. Which conveniently around this time that this was happening, he was getting dropped by them. They had a big spread in one of the fashion magazines with the guy that is in Squid Game, number 0, the old guy.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's convenient.
Yeah.
They get this cool old guy versus Kanye West are telling to go fuck off.
Yeah.
I say here, Balenciaga wants, has no longer any relationship nor any plans for future projects related to this artist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think Adidas is also reviewing its partnership. Mm-hmm. As he has also basically said, like, I can say anything I want about the Jews and Adidas can't do anything to me.
Yeah, Adidas is a German company. And, yeah. Like, okay, so we know where Adidas originally started. And they've been doing a lot, everything detached themselves from that little connection to the Third Reich. And, yeah, he keeps this up. They're probably going to be the next one to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think,
hell, they might be legally required to.
They yeah. might be having meetings about it, like, now.
Yeah.
No, they've been having, probably looking over all the legal details.
Mm-hmm.
For breaking the contract, all that kind of stuff. And I forget which company he does his shoe business with. Jordan or Nike, I forget.
God, I forgot.
But I think they're looking into dropping him. At least as like the brand for
the shoes?
Yeah, the Yeezy shoes.
Yeah.
That they would probably drop his brand from it, but
mm-hmm.
Keep the people that work on the shoes and just rebrand it as something else that isn't linking to a person that has become very anti-Semitic in the past couple of months here.
Mm-hmm.
Circling back to the parlor thing, did any of you see the really weird meme that Elon Musk posted of him and Kanye doing the fusion dance?
Oh, God.
Over their social media purchases?
Yeah, but that just makes Truth Social, because that's what that is.
Yeah.
And we know how that ends.
Yeah. I have to ask, does anybody actually wear any of the Yeezy brand shoes? Because I've seen some of them, and they look very impractical as footwear.
A lot of it's collectibles, just the way that they sell those out.
I mean,
status symbol bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, because you know,
none of these like shoes go out in a lottery system.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So there are probably some people that are actually wearing them, but probably a lot of people are putting them in, you know, their closet to maybe sell them later.
Yeah. Because I'm like, I'm looking at those things. I'm like, you guys have seen them, right?
Yeah.
They look very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And frankly, ugly, too.
Are you looking at the foam ones?
I'm looking at all of them.
Okay.
Some of them are all right, you know.
Okay, these are with Adidas. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. So that was Kanye's bad week. And I have a feeling it's going to get worse. You know, I just realized something. This is the result of Kim taking the kids, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Like, I'm starting to think she was the one thing left that was keeping him anchored, and now she's out of the picture.
At minimum, this was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
You're basically saying his ego's the problem.
Well, it's part of it. His ego has always been an issue.
Yeah.
Like,
one of the richest women in the world, he had the biggest ego anybody's ever had.
And I think there also might have been also because of the rumors that the reason they broke up is because he was having an affair with Jeffree Star. But that's tabloid bullshit. You
convinced me of that, too. That tracks.
Yeah. And he also lost it with when she was dating Pete Davidson.
Yeah.
The idea that she would go from Kanye West to Pete Davidson.
Yeah.
Drove him nuts so much that he like posted threats to Pete Davidson on his Instagram or whatever. You know, very normal person.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder why she wouldn't take him back.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fuckers out there who act just like that. I'm not saying that it's right. I'm just saying that world out there is a little bit scary.
Yeah.
And they don't have his money to back it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And talent, to a degree.
To a degree, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
These are people that will question it at this point, which is like, fine.
Mm. Anyway, moving on from there, the EPA has now started a civil rights probe into the water issues in Mississippi. Those of you who don't know, recently, because of some climate change mess, There's a good chunk of Mississippi that now does not have, that has not had access to clean water for a very extended period of time now. Yeah. And now they're looking into it as like, is this like something that was like built into the system? Which,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
It's good that we're seeing stuff like this get looked into now.
Yeah.
And in Mississippi, yeah, of all places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They said they are investigating whether Mississippi state agencies discriminated against the state's majority black capital city by refusing to fund improvements for its failing water system. That had been known to be in disrepair for a while.
For a past while. Few years.
Yeah.
It was a bear shit in the woods.
Yeah.
Is the Pope Catholic?
Yeah, and they're, let's see, leaders of two congressional committees said they were starting a joint investigation into a crisis that left most homes and businesses in Jackson without running water for several days in late August and early September. Mm. Yeah, they still are overseeing operations and repairs of the facility since then, the Mississippi Emergency Management Agency.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jackson is noteworthy here because about 80% of their 150,000 residents are black.
Mm-hmm.
About a quarter of the population lives in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by the time the emergency order was issued, Jackson residents already been told for a month to boil their water before to kill possible contaminants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, guess who lives in the in Jackson? The president of the NAACP.
Uh-huh.
Who called the EPA investigation a step in the right direction after years of the state withholding federal funds needed to avert the city's water system.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also great to
do
that in that one city where one of the most important people in civil rights right now is living.
Yeah. Yeah. Now it may also turn out that it actually has that and it's all just plain greed that somebody was, you know, funneling the money somewhere else. Like into their own coffers or whatever.
Yeah.
Also,
that also was fun. Yeah. Remember, this is Mississippi we're talking about. Mississippi is the one state that everywhere points you to say, hey, look, we're not as bad as they are.
It's true.
Yeah, let me put it this way. Here in Georgia, we have a saying. When things go bad, we say, thank God for Alabama. Now in Alabama, they have a saying, which is when things go bad, they say, thank God for Mississippi. And in Mississippi, they have a saying when things go bad, which is, why the hell are we still in Mississippi?
Yeah.
But, yeah. So that's happening. Also, we recently had the what looked maybe for a while the last bit of testimony from the January 6th committee. And at the end of it, they voted unanimously to subpoena the former president to testify by November 14th. And this week he was officially subpoenaed.
Yep. It requires Trump to produce the documents by November 4th and to appear for testimony on or about November 14th.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, hopefully he just does it and stops acting like a giant 70, he'd be his mid-70s by now, baby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which he loves to be.
Yeah.
So he goes on his rallies and whines for an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's going to happen. We'll see where that goes. Also, on top of all this, you know, they are still jailing and trying people that were involved in the January 6th insurrection. And this week, an insurrectionist was sentenced to over 3 years in prison for obstructing an official proceeding. That's kind of a mouthful of a sentence, but
yeah, this guy seemed to very much deserve this. Christian Secor, who was a student at UCLA, broke into the U.S. Capitol along with hundreds of rioters, entered the Senate chamber while carrying the flag of an extremist, anti-immigrant, and anti-Semitic movement. And sat in the chair recently vacated by former Vice President Mike Pence.
Mm.
Not long after, Secor posted on Twitter that Trump supporters should be proud of the Capitol riot, in which more than 140 police officers were injured. One day accomplished more for conservatism in the last 30 years.
Mm.
But yeah, on Wednesday,
that aged well.
Yeah, on Wednesday, the 24-year-old Secor was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. Earlier this year, he pleaded guilty to obstruction of an official proceeding, a felony. And the judge seemed to be having none of his shit. Who was nominated to the federal court by Trump, said Secor's conduct was about as blatant and obstructive as any he's seen from that day that didn't include actual violence. The probation office recommended a decrease in the sentencing guidelines due to Secor accepting responsibility for his actions, and the defense submitted letters in support of Secor's remorse. However, McFadden told Secor, "I'm not sure I've really seen that from you, sir." Let's see. Assistant U.S. Attorney Kimberly Peschall, prosecutor in the case, emphasized Secor's enthusiasm for guns, his involvement with America First, which the government called an extremist group. It is that ideology coupled with action that concerns the government. She also said that Secor's specific presence in House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office and Mike Pence's chair on the Senate floor were concerning given his prior comments about civil war. That context, Peschall said, makes him more culpable in the eyes of the government than someone who walked in, saw the rotunda, and left. The Department of Justice asked for his sentence to be just under 5 years in prison. In addition to storming the Capitol, prosecutors have raised concerns about his large purchases from firearms and tactical gear retailers, GoPro video in which he wielded an AR-15-style rifle in his room, and his discussion and text messages of conducting further operations that were ultra-secret after January 6th. After this hearing, Secor declined to speak, other than to say the operation referred to in those messages referred to a business idea rather than any violence. That sure is a weird way to put it. Prosecutors also said that 6 days after the riot, an associate texted Secor about buying guns. Hey, bro, do you make any Glocks or AR for sale? There's more here. He's a prime example of why you should stay in school. Because now he's going to prison for another 3 years or so.
All right. And next up, we've got the governor's race in Oregon, which is an absolute flustercuck because, Oregon normally is pretty reliably a Democratic stronghold for their governors. And they've had Democratic governors for the last 40 years. But what happened is, after the COVID and everything, people some stuff and their outgoing governor was not particularly popular. And so the current Democrat is running neck and neck with the Republican. And there's two wrenches that have gotten in this. One is the Democrat who sort of jettisoned their party affiliation and is now running as an independent, as a quote-unquote centrist. And the other is Phil Knight. You guys know who Phil Knight is?
Oh, why is that name familiar?
He's the co-founder of Nike.
Yeah, the richest person in Oregon.
And he's decided that he wants to meddle.
Yeah, because he hates the Democrats, or at least this Democrat that's running. He spent initially $3.75 million backing Johnson, who is the centrist. When her polling numbers didn't budge at all, he then cut a $1 million check to Drazen, the Republican, who was a former House GOP leader for the state house, at least. The current Democrat running is the former state house speaker for the Democrats. This race is much, much, much closer than people would have expected. But the rich guy wants to meddle in it because he has nothing else to do. He's the reason why Oregon has such wild uniforms all the time. University. Because he funds them getting new uniforms all the time.
Yeah.
And helmets and all that stuff.
Yep.
That's not great.
No, it is not. These midterms are going to be wild, too.
Yeah, part of the reason is they don't have a law against or capping donations from individual people.
Yeah, that's right.
Just was getting drafted.
Yeah, no campaign contribution limits, and the three candidates have raised more than $55 million in total this year, shattering previous records.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
The Republican Governors Association and Democratic Governors Association have poured money into Oregon, but yeah, Phil Knight is also a big part of that.
Mm.
So we know one way or the other somebody's dumped over $50 million on a losing campaign.
Yep. We'll see. On top of this, Republican states are pushing to get their voting district maps by narrowing down who's black and who's not.
Yep. You might as well just say it because that's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, this is also specifically based on census data.
Yep.
And a thing that changed in, I think, the 2000 census is that you didn't have to pick one race. You could pick multiple if you, are of mixed race and want to identify that way. And now...
Fuck, because I'm a mutt.
And now the Republicans want to say that, do people that pick, black and Asian, are they actually black? Should they count when it comes to gerrymandering maps? Alabama tried to do that. Let me see here how this is...
Of course, that's where they go.
Republican state officials, however, called for narrower definitions of blackness that do not include people who also identify with another minority group. Citing no evidence, GOP officials in Alabama argued in lower court findings that limiting the definition to people who mark just the black box and do not identify as Latino for the census would be most defensible. And in the Louisiana case, officials have been arguing for the definition only include people who check off either just the black box or both black and white and do not identify as Latino. Before appealing their redistricting case to the Supreme Court, Oberlin officials dropped their push to redefine blackness because they, realize we have no evidence for anything we're saying. We're just being legally racist. But the state of Louisiana, its Republican Secretary of State, Kyle Ardoin, have asked the country's highest court to weigh in with a final word on which definition should be used in Section 2 cases. Let's see. Lower courts have already found that even when using more limited definitions of black, as proposed by Republican officials, the premise of the court's analysis of these voting maps do not change. Still, in one filing to the high court, Louisiana officials say using the more expansive definition of blackness, which includes all people who identify themselves as black, to analyze the state's new map of congressional districts is an independent legal error warranting this court's intervention. They're trying to minimize who can be black and count when it comes to these redistricting maps.
Yep.
And that's pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Extremely. All right. Well, that's it for the serious part of the show. We're now going into the less entertainment part. First off, Massachusetts named the swift-footed lizard of Holyoke as its state dinosaur.
Yeah.
I like it.
Official name is Podokesaurus Holyokensis. Received more than 60% of the roughly 35,000 votes cast in a social media campaign initiated early last year by State Rep Jack Lewis. Beating another dinosaur was also discovered in the state. This is what Massachusetts has going on right now. As their Governor Charlie Baker has officially named that the state's official dinosaur under legislation signed into law on Wednesday. Here's a fun weird quote here. If I think about my own childhood, the thing that got me interested in science in the first place was dinosaurs. And the main reason they got me interested is because of their majesty and their ferocity and their almost alien being status. As a kid, they just created wonder.
Yeah, okay. Like,
okay. Say you're an old person without saying you're an old person. I'm going to look up his age right now. Let's see. 65 years. He's definitely too old to, like most of us, I believe, to be Jurassic Park fans when we were young. That being our interest in dinosaurs. And unfortunately, a bad way to start because dinosaurs did not look like any of those did.
No. We now have a better idea of what.
Yeah, like the velociraptors were about the size of chickens.
Yeah. Now the Utah raptors, on the other hand, they are actually closer to what you see in Jurassic Park.
And like the T-Rex has feathers.
Yeah.
Most of them had feathers.
A lot of them had feathers. Not all of them, but a lot of them.
Yeah.
Also, you got to remember that a lot of these dinosaur species, a lot of them lived thousands, if not millions of years apart from each other.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, but this dinosaur was discovered in Western Massachusetts in 1910 by Mount Holyoke College professor Mignon Talbot, the first woman to find, discover, and name and describe a dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also a fun aspect to this whole thing.
Yep.
Yeah, the species was about 3 to 6 feet tall, or 3 to 6 feet in length, weighed about 90 pounds, was estimated to run about 9 to 12 miles per hour.
Mm.
The governor calls this creature a tough, spunky underdog from Holyoke. It's like, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, moving on from there, we got some trailers. First off, we got a trailer for Netflix's version of All Quiet on the Western Front. Did any of you guys read this book when you were younger? Like, get it assigned to you for, like, required reading or anything?
Can't say I did.
Yeah, do you know what it's about?
I don't think so. That's not the ambulance driver one, is it?
No. This is the one about the dude who is, you know,
World War One.
Yeah, and drafted into the German army. And, you know, sort of all the awful shit that he experiences there, you know, compared to, you know, all of the stuff that, you know, his culture tells him about what war is like compared to the reality. And then kind of trying to, you know, what it's like to sort of try and reassert yourself back into civilian life. It famously was one of the books that the Nazis burned when they came to power.
Yeah.
So Netflix has a version of those
stories. It's about how soldiers on all sides were the victims of that war.
Mm-hmm.
That only the, you know, the generals and such that were dictating everything and making the decisions were the ones in power.
Yeah.
But people, so many people lost their lives in that war.
Yeah.
And many suffered for years afterwards due to the various chemicals they inhaled and injuries they sustained and all that.
And that was, you know, and if they were lucky, they had to deal with just simple poverty. Because I talked on the show a bit about Weimar Germany after that war. And Weimar Germany was very much a government that was in constant crisis. And there were a lot of pissed off former soldiers going around, paramilitaries. One of them ended up becoming the Nazi Party. Hitler was one of those former soldiers. And the author of that book, like, he, you know, first of all, he got very wealthy after that book was published because it sold like crazy all over the world. Like, it sold a good 12 million copies. He made a lot of money. And there was a lot of Germans who hated him for it. Because one of the things about Germany after that war, a lot of people don't understand, is that because the military government was strictly controlling the type of information that was going in and out of Germany at the time, the people in Germany themselves got a much rosier depiction of how the war was going versus how it actually was. And so when they suddenly decided to sign this armistice out of nowhere, it was kind of a shock to a lot of the Germans because they thought, we were doing pretty well. What happened? And it's from where that whole, what they call the stab in the back myth started. It's like, no, we didn't lose the war on the front. We lost it because we were stabbed in the back by a bunch of unpatriotic Jews and communists and all this stuff. So, yeah. And finally, we got a new trailer for Trigun Stampede. That's right. Trigun is back, baby.
Yes.
And it looks really good.
Prequel.
Yeah, it's a prequel.
Yeah, kind
of. But it's still Trigun. I'll take it.
Yeah. There we got like an early Meryl strife in there.
Mm-hmm.
Though this doesn't make any much sense because like they, in the old anime, they were like unaware of who Vash was, and this seems to just that they were involved early on. Though he still has the huge bounty in this, but I don't know when in this first season they're gonna run into that.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the question mark is sort of how this is structured.
Mm.
Yeah, it could just be a retelling of the original.
Could be.
In a new way.
Yeah. Trigun is interesting in that it's one of those more popular overseas than it really was in Japan. Like, it was more of a moderate success over there, whereas over here, it was like up there with, like, you know, Cowboy Bebop. And
yeah.
It's one of those shows that Adult Swim put into...
It was part of that block, and they got a huge residual viewership out of it.
It was on Toonami. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, it was part of that block of shows. Really paid off for them.
Yeah.
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 I still don't know if I like the original show. I liked a lot of it. Where it's
I'll be perfectly honest. I prefer the manga.
That was good.
Maybe I should read that at some point. But yeah, like
the manga is frankly better.
The show kind of drags on at times. It's a lot better. It's a lot better when
Dark Horse. So get ready to pay.
Yeah,
yeah. It's better when it's like, oh, here's this guy that supposedly has like a huge bounty on him,
mm-hmm.
and these random guys keep showing up to like fuck him up and take that bounty.
Mm-hmm.
But then he just pulls out these weird ass. Lucky streaks of victory somehow. Mm. That he very much seems to be like a pacifist when he's in his normal self.
Mm-hmm.
But don't piss him off.
Yeah, do not piss him off.
He goes into some other version of himself.
Yeah, and it is legit terrifying when you first see it.
And it's like, oh, he could destroy the entire planet, seemingly.
Yeah, that's the reason he has a bounty.
Yeah.
Because he's basically a weapon of mass destruction in human.
Yeah, it's like, I enjoy like the first half of that more than the second half.
Yeah. But yeah, the manga is superior to the anime. Not only is Yasuhiro Naito absolutely gorgeous, but the storytelling is just better.
Yeah.
That said, though, the manga also does have that tone shift. And largely it's because it switched formats like midway through its publication.
Trigun Maximum, I think it was.
Yeah. Yeah. But by the way, and in case you're interested in more of Naito's work, he also did another awesome manga after it that eventually got its own anime adaptation called Blood Blockade Battlefront. Yeah. That's a good one too. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and he's the guy behind Gungrave. I forgot that, too.
That makes sense when there's, like, the guy with the cross gun.
Yeah, well, the cross gun, well, the whole thing of, like, putting a machine gun in it comes from Django, but, yeah it's... Well, that's
very much a Gungrave thing, but also in this as well, where it's like, mm-hmm. these guys got weird ways of revealing their guns.
Yeah. There's one dude whose like weapon is like a deadly saxophone. I remember that too.
Mm-hmm.
Trigun is basically anybody who hasn't seen Trigun or is like, what the hell are we? Trigun is basically a space western. Like that's what it is. You know, like Firefly has or
insurance agents following him around.
Yeah,
because
they need to know like what the fuck, how is he causing all this destruction?
Yeah,
whether they're actually responsible for it.
He doesn't try to. He just, for whatever reason, he keeps getting into these situations where he has to beat the hell out of people because they're being assholes.
Yeah,
and because he does so much damage, he basically has to flee town afterwards.
Yeah,
but
and nobody believes he's Vash the Stampede.
because he's such a nice guy.
Because he looks like a dork.
Yeah, and he's a massive dork. That's
he's
true.
He's a dweeb.
Yeah. He's the typical shonen protagonist, in other words. Except Trigun was not a shonen series, but who cares? The point is, Trigun is back and I'm happy.
Yes.
But yeah, I do believe we got ourselves a show. Yes, we do. We have got ourselves a show. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for it in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, we got a little bit of, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at archive.org, obviously, but also RSS, Google Play, pretty much any kind of podcast you come across, we're on there. And if we're not, just wait a few minutes, because as soon as we find out of its existence, we will immediately sign on to it, because we will get this podcast to you whether you like it or not. But on the off chance you do like it, please share it with your friends and your family and people who mind your presence. Because they may slightly dislike you, but they might slightly prefer us. I think. I have no idea where this is. I'm just going to go ahead and wrap it up here. Join us again next week. We'll have a bunch more unscripted bullshit. And, man, it's going to be funny because we're getting down to the midterms. They're really close, folks. Seriously, like, I'm checking the calendar right now. It's a little over 2 weeks away.
I feel like I'm getting flyers from candidates multiple times a week.
I am constantly having to click off of freaking YouTube videos because I keep getting those stupid ads.
And the texting this time.
Yeah. And
yeah, everybody's telling me to vote early.
It gives me a good chance to verbally abuse them, though.
Yeah.
I just put them in spam.
Yeah. It constantly amuses me how many conservatives are trying to go door to door with an economic message and have absolutely nothing to say when I respond with, I would burn this entire economy to the ground just to catch the religious right in the flames.
And that's where we're going to end it. Good night, folks.